9. Out of control.
Rice Daniels, Mr. Laney. Out of control.
Pressing a card of some kind to the opposite side of the scratched plastic that walled the room called visitors away from those who gave it its name. Laney had tried to read it, but the attempt at focusing had driven an atrocious spike of pain between his eyes. He'd looked at Rice Daniels instead, through tears of pain. Close-cropped dark hair, close-fitting sunglasses with small oval lenses, the black frames gripping the man's head like some kind of surgical clamp. Nothing at all about Rice Daniels appeared to be out of control.
"The series," he said. "Out of control? As in, aren't the media? Out of control, the cutting edge of counter-investigative journalism."
Laney had gingerly tried touching the tape across the bridge of his nose. A mistake.
"Counter-investigative?
You're a quant, Mr. Laney."
A quantitative analyst. He wasn't really, but that was technically his job description.
"For slit scan."
Laney didn't respond.
"The girl was the focus of intensive surveillance. Slit scan was all over her. You know why. We believe a case can be made here for slit scan's culpability in the death of Allison Shires."
Laney looked down at his running shoes, their laces removed by the deputies.
"She killed herself," he said.
"But we know why."
"No," Laney said, meeting the black ovals again. "I don't. Not exactly." The nodal point. Protocols of some other realm entirely.
"You're going to need help, Laney. You might be looking at a manslaughter charge. Abetting a suicide? They'll want to know why you were up there."
"I'll tell them why."
"Our producers managed to get me in here fast, Laney. It wasn't easy. There's a spin control team from Slitscan out there now waiting to talk with you. If you let them, they'll turn it all around. They'll get you off, because they have to in order to cover the show. They can do it with enough money and the right lawyers. But ask yourself this. Do you want to let them do it?"
Daniels still had his business card thumbed up against the plastic. Trying to focus on it again, Laney saw that someone had scratched something in from the other side, in small, uneven mirror letters, so that he could read it left to right.
"I know you did it."
"I've never heard of Out of Control."
"Our hour-long pilot is in production as we speak, Mr. Laney."
A measured pause.
"We're all very excited."
"Why?"
"Out of Control isn't just a series. We think of it as an entirely new paradigm, a new way to do television. Your story, Allison Shire's story, is precisely what we intend to get out there. Our producers are people who want to give something back to the audience. They've done well. They're established. They've proven themselves. Now, they want to give something back, to restore a degree of honesty, a new opportunity for perspective."
The black ovals drew slightly closer to the scratched plastic.
"Our producers are the producers of Cops in Trouble and A Calm and Deliberate Fashion."
"A what?"
"Factual accounts of premeditated violence in the global fashion industry."
"Counter-investigative?"
Yamazaki's pen hovered over the notebook.
"It was a show about shows like Slit Scan," Laney explained. "Supposed abuses."
There were no stools at the bar, which might have been 10 feet long. You stood. Aside from the bartender, in some kind of kabuki drag, they had the place to themselves, by virtue of filling it, basically. It was probably the smallest freestanding commercial structure Laney had ever seen, and it seemed to have been there forever, like a survival from ancient Edo, a city of shadows and minute dark lanes. The walls were shingled with faded postcards, gone a uniform sepia under a glaze of accumulated nicotine and cooking smoke.
"Ah," Yamazaki said at last, "a meta-tabloid."
The bartender was broiling two sardines on a doll's hot plate. He flipped them with a pair of steel chopsticks, transferred them to a tiny plate, garnished them with some kind of colorless translucent pickle, and presented them to Lainey.
"Thanks," Lainey said. The bartender ducked his shaven eyebrows.
In spite of the modest decor, there were dozens of bottles of expensive-looking whiskey arranged behind the bar, each one with a handwritten brown paper sticker, the owner's name in Japanese. Yamazaki had explained that you bought one, and they kept it there for you. Blackwell was on his second tumbler of the local vodka analog, on the rocks. Yamazaki was sticking to Coke Light. Lainey had an untouched shot of surrealistically expensive Kentucky straight bourbon whiskey in front of him, and wondered vaguely what it would do to his jet lag if he were actually to drink it.
"So," Blackwell said, draining the tumbler, ice clinking against his prosthetic, "they get you out so they can have a go at these other bastards."
"That was it, basically," Lainey said. "They had their own legal team waiting to do that, and another team to work on the non-disclosure agreement I'd signed with Slitscan."
"And the second team had the bigger job," Blackwell said, shoving his empty glass toward the bartender, who swept it smoothly out of sight, producing a fresh replacement just as smoothly, as if from nowhere.
"That's true," Lainey said. He'd had no idea, really, of what he'd be getting into when he'd found himself agreeing to the general outlines of Rice Daniels' offer. But there was something in him that didn't want to see Slitscan walk away from the sound of that one single shot from Allison Shire's kitchen, produced, the cops had pointed out, by a Russian-made device that was hardly more than a cartridge, a tube to contain it, and the simplest possible firing mechanism. These were designed with suicide almost exclusively in mind. There was no way to aim them at anything more than 2 inches away. Lainey had heard of them, but had never seen one before. For some reason, they were called Wednesday Night Specials. And Slitscan would walk away, he knew. They'd drop the sequence on Allison's actor, if they felt they had to, and the whole thing would settle to the sea floor, silting over almost instantly, with the world's steady accretion of data. And Allison Shire's life, as he'd known it, in all that terrible, banal intimacy, would lie there forever, forgotten and finally unknowable. But if he went with Out of Control, her life might retrospectively become something else, and he wasn't sure exactly, sitting there on the hard little chair in Visitors, what that might be. He thought of Coral, of the reefs that grew around sunken aircraft carriers. Perhaps she'd become something like that, the buried mystery beneath some exfoliating superstructure of supposition, or even of myth. It seemed to him, in Visitors, that that might be a slightly less dead way of being dead, and he wished her that. "Get me out of here," he said to Daniels, who smiled beneath his surgical clamp, whipping the card triumphantly away from the plastic.
"Steady,"
said Blackwell, laying his huge hand, with its silvery pink fretwork of scars, over Lainey's wrist.
"You haven't even had your drink yet."
Lainey had met Rydell when the out-of-control team installed him in a suite at the Chateau, that ancient simulacrum of a still more ancient original, its quaint concrete eccentricities pinched between the twin brutalities of a particularly nasty pair of office buildings dating from the final year of the previous century. These reflected all the millennial anxiety of the year of their creation, while refracting it through some other more mysterious, weirdly muted hysteria that seemed somehow more personal and even less attractive. Lainey's suite, much larger than his apartment in Santa Monica, was like an elongated 1920s apartment following the long, shallow concrete balcony that faced sunset, this in turn overlooking a deeper balcony on the floor below, and the tiny circular lawn that was all that remained of the original gardens. Lainey thought it was a strange choice, considering his situation. He would have imagined they'd choose something more corporate, more fortified, more heavily wired, but Rice Daniels had explained that the Chateau had advantages all its own. It was a good choice in terms of image,
because it humanized Lainey. It looked like a habitation, basically, something with walls and doors and windows, in which a guest could be imagined to be living something akin to a life, not at all the case with the geometric solids that were serious business hotels. It also had deeply rooted associations with the Hollywood star system, and with human tragedy as well. Stars had lived here in the heyday of old Hollywood, and later, certain stars had died here. Out of Control planned to frame the death of Allison Shires as a tragedy in a venerable Hollywood tradition, but one that had been brought on by Slitscan, a very contemporary entity. Besides, Daniels explained, the chateau was far more secure than it might at first look. And at this point, Lainey had been introduced to Barry Rydell, the night security man. Daniels and Rydell, it seemed to Lainey, had known one another prior to Rydell working at the chateau, though how exactly remained unclear. Rydell seemed oddly at home with the workings of the infotainment industry, and at one point, when they'd found themselves alone together, he'd asked Lainey who was representing him. "How do you mean?" Lainey had said. "You've got an agent, don't you?" Lainey said he didn't.
"You better get one," Rydell had said. "Not that it'll necessarily come out the way you'd wanted, but, hey, it's show business, right?"
It was indeed show business, to an extent that very quickly made Lainey wonder if he'd made the right decision. There had been 16 people in his suite for a 4-hour meeting, and he'd only been out of the lockup for 6 hours. When they'd finally gone, Lainey had staggered the length of the place, mistakenly trying several closet doors in his search for the bedroom. Finding it, he'd crawled onto the bed and fallen asleep in the clothes they'd sent Rydell to the Beverly Center to buy for him. Which he thought he might well do right here, now, in this Golden Street bar, thereby answering the question of what the bourbon was doing to his jet lag. But now, finishing the remainder of the shot, he felt one of those tidal reversals begin, perhaps less to do with the drink than with some inbuilt chemistry of fatigue and displacement.
"Was Rydell happy?"
Yamazaki asked. It seemed a strange question to Lainey, but then he'd remembered Rydell mentioning someone Japanese, someone he'd known in San Francisco, and that, of course, had been Yamazaki. "Well," Lainey said, "he didn't strike me as desperately unhappy, but there was something sort of down about him. You could say that. I mean, I don't really know him well at all."
"It is too bad," Yamazaki said. "Rydell is a brave man."
"How about you, Lainey?" Blackwell said. "You think of yourself as a brave man?"
The worm-like scar that bisected his eyebrow writhed into a new degree of concentration. "No," Lainey said. "I don't."
"But you went up against Slitscan, didn't you? Because of what they did to the girl? You had a job, you had food, you had a place to sleep. You got all that from Slitscan, but they did the girl, so you opted to do them back. Is that right?"
"Nothing's ever that simple," Lainey said. When Blackwell spoke, Lainey was unexpectedly aware of another sort of intelligence, something the man must ordinarily conceal.
"No," Blackwell said, almost gently. "It fucking well isn't, is it?"
One large, pinkly, jigsawed hand, like some clumsy animal in its own right, began to root in the taut breast pocket of Blackwell's micropore, producing a small, gray, metallic object that he placed on the bar.
"Now that's a nail," Blackwell said. "Galvanized, 1.5-inch long. Roofing. I've nailed men's hands to bars like this, with nails like that. And some of them were right bastards."
There was nothing at all of threat in Blackwell's voice.
"And some of those, you nail their one hand, their other comes up with a razor or a pair of needle-nose pliers."
Blackwell's forefinger absently found an angry-looking scar beneath his right eye, as though something had entered there and been deflected along the cheekbone.
"To have a go, right?"
"Pliers?"
"Bastards. Blackwell said. You have to kill him, then. Now, that's one kind of brave, Laney. What I mean is, how's that so different from what you tried to do to Slitscan?
I just didn't want them to let it drop. To let her settle to the bottom, be forgotten. I didn't really care how badly Slitscan got hurt, or even if they were damaged or not. I wasn't thinking of revenge, as much as a way of keeping her alive.
There's other men. You nail their hand to a table, they'll sit there and look at you. That's your true hard man, Laney. Do you think you're one of those?
Laney looked from Blackwell to the empty bourbon glass, back to Blackwell. The bartender moved as if to refill it, but Laney covered it with his hand.
If you nail my hand to the bar, Blackwell.
And here he spread his other hand, flat, palm down on the dark wood, the drink-ringed varnish. I'll scream, okay? I don't know what any of this is about. You might be crazy, but what I most definitely am not is anybody's idea of a hero. I'm not now, and I wasn't back there in L.A.
Blackwell and Yamazaki exchanged glances. Blackwell pursed his lips, gave a tiny nod.
Good on you, then, he said. I think you just might be right for the job.
No job, Laney said, but let the bartender pour him a second bourbon.
I don't want to hear about any job at all. Not until I know who's hiring me. I'm chief of security for Low Res, Blackwell said, and I owe that silly bastard my life, the last five of which I'd have passed in the punitive bowels of the state of fucking Victoria, if it hadn't been for him, though I'd have topped myself first, no fear.
The band? Your security for them?
Rydell spoke well of you, Mr. Laney.
Yamazaki's neck bobbed in the collar of his plaid shirt.
I don't know Rydell, Laney said. He was just the night watchman at a hotel I couldn't afford.
Rydell has a good sense of people, I think,
Yamazaki said. To Blackwell. Low Res? They're in trouble?
Res, Blackwell said. He says he's going to marry this Jap twist doesn't fucking exist, and he knows she doesn't, and says we've no fucking imagination. Now hear me.
And Blackwell produced, from some unspecific region of his clothing, a mirror-polished rectangle with a round hole through its uppermost, leading corner, something not much bigger than a cash card, to see it in his big hand.
Someone's got to our boy here. Got to him. Don't know how, don't know who. Though personally myself, I'd bet on the fucking Combinat. Those Russ bastards. But you, my friend, you're going to do your nodal thing for us, on our res, and you are going to find fucking out. Who?
And the rectangle came down with a concise little thunk, to be left standing, crosswise to the counter's grain, and Laney saw that it was a very small meat cleaver, with round steel rivets through its tiny rosewood handle.
And when you do, Blackwell said, we shall sort them well and fucking out.